This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a Deacon and Trustees Seminar held on August 4, 2026 in Goshen, Indiana.
Good afternoon again. It is good to be here with you all. By the way, if you wonder where McVeightown, Pennsylvania is, it's right across the mountain from Belleville, Pennsylvania. The Peachy should be a dead giveaway that I'm from the Big Valley area. So, nurturing stewardship discussions. So maybe you come to these seminars and you're burdened about your congregation and how they're dealing with finances, and you wish to open the conversation, but you're not quite sure, how do I approach the congregation? What do I use? How do I open the conversation with them to sort through what we are doing with our finances? So we're going to be looking at the salt and light material that you have in front of you. You don't need to pull that out yet. We'll get to that. But it's a tool. One of the things in your toolbox is that you can use to have that conversation with your congregation. So some objectives. The why. So we're assisting in the journey to becoming better biblical stewards. And here's the thing. It's both with those struggling with wealth and those struggling with excess spending or debt. Often we think it's the people that have the excess spending and debt that we need to help. But there are people in our communities who are struggling with wealth as well. And the goal here is to have you leave equipped and excited to invest in your local brotherhood using this course as a meaningful tool. And I would just say, this is not a once and a done type of thing, but there's ongoing learning and teaching as a way of life. So why finances? This is what we're going to go through here. Why the finances? Why do we talk about finances? How and what did Jesus teach in the Gospels? And have we become distracted from the biblical target? And then we're going to look at the Salt and Light course that can be a tool for you in your congregation. And then we're going to talk a little bit about our worldview problem and how worldviews change slowly, and it takes time, and there's ongoing teaching that needs to happen. And then we're going to talk about that the local brotherhood has the gifts. You don't actually need outside experts to come in and tell you how to deal with your finances. So why finances? So why should a church leader be concerned about this subject? Is the subject even important? You know, we might hear a church leader say, just let me preach and let others take care of the finances. Well, we believe that managing our money is connected to most areas of our life, and we need to take a holistic approach. It's both the spiritual and the physical. And Jesus said, this is how we know what is in our hearts. Because where our heart is, that's where our treasure goes. Look at this slide here a little bit. As you think about your congregation, what is in our heart? Or where does the money go after we've covered the basic things in life that we need for survival? And sometimes we get a little twisted up, a little confused about what the basic essentials actually are. So what would be the picture for your church where the question mark is there? You've got the money in the green, you got the question mark, you have the heart. What's in there for the people in your congregation? Is it the expensive vehicle or expensive horse maybe? Is it RVs? Is it costly vacations? Is it hunting trips, fishing trips? Or is it maybe people just spending money little by little? They're just drinking all their money through their body by going to coffee shops all the time? Does that actually have their heart? What about your youth? What has their heart? Or is the box filled with serving other people? Maybe your local, the local homeless and the needy. You know, I digress here just a little bit, but I saw in the back, the church has this faith mission of Elkhart. I'm not sure what it's back there for, but envelope there. I remember as a youngster, I was born in LaGrange here, and I remember going to Elkhart to faith mission with our church group. And these people coming in, and we'd feed them supper. Is that the passion of your church group, of your youth? Is that what is in their heart? And can the answer to this question inform us of what type of churches we are? So, we need to learn from Jesus. What did Jesus spend time teaching and talking about? How did the master teacher impart truth with his listeners? So, in the Bible, and I didn't go through the Bible and figure out there's 500 verses on prayer. I'm using somebody else's there. There's also 500 verses on faith. There's 2,000 verses on money and possessions. 1 out of 10 verses in the Gospels deals directly with the subject of money. And of the 38 parables Jesus told, 16 refer to handling money and possessions. I think God cares deeply about finances. So how did Jesus teach while he was here on the earth? Well, he used language that the audience understood. You know, he did a lot of parables. When he told those parables, the people that he was teaching, his disciples could say, yeah, yep, I know what he's talking about. I remember a man, the man that Richie was talking about that went into a far country. They could relate with those stories. He used object lessons, proverbs and story form, something close at hand. That's how Jesus taught his people. So any guess on what percentage of Jesus' total words were in parables in the New Testament? Just anybody, just take a guess. What percentage of his words were in parables? 50%? Not quite that high. It was 33%. A third of what Jesus spoke that's recorded is in parables. So if we're going to teach like Jesus did, we use questions and we dialogue. Jesus asked, how many questions do you think he asked in all of the Gospels? Again, just to give me a figure. How many questions do you think he asked? Not a right or wrong question. This is participatory later on, so you may as well get involved now. Yes? 200? A little higher than that. There was 339 questions that Jesus asked. That's a lot of questions. People ask Jesus questions as well. How many times do you think they ask questions that are recorded in Scripture? 500? 183. Now, here's the interesting part. People asked Jesus questions 183 times. How many times do you think he responded with direct answers? What was that? Zero? No, it's more than that. It was 8 times. So some examples of that are, so remember the lawyer that came and said, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus told him, what do you read? And then he launched into the parable of the Good Samaritan. Did he actually tell the lawyer? Did he answer him directly? No, he didn't. He gave a parable. But if the man was listening, he actually knew what the answer was. But then the rich young ruler, when he talked, what did Jesus say? This is one of the 8 times that Jesus answered directly. He said, sell all that you have and give to the poor, And then he went on to talk about it's easier for the camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a wealthy man to enter into heaven. By the way, if Jesus would come to your congregation, do you think there's anyone in your congregation that Jesus would say, you should sell all that you have? Do we not have any rich young rulers anymore? Was that just back in Jesus' day? Was it only in Jesus' day that money had people's heart? What would you do if a rich young ruler came to you and said, you know what, Deacon, I think God wants me to sell everything? Would you help him liquidate? Or would you try to rationalize that surely that's not quite what God meant for you? What would we do? So, if we want to be faithful, do we have the resources that are needed? 100 years ago, a little over 100 years ago, in 1918, America spent 84% of their household income on the essentials: food, clothing, and shelter. Those are the basics. Leaving about 16% for discretionary spending. Fast forward 100 years to 2018, we spend only about 38% on the essentials: food, clothing, and shelter. And we have 62% left over for discretionary spending. Now, everybody's budget's a little different, so those numbers might be different for different people. But money is opportunity, and we have unprecedented financial opportunity to bless others. But you know what's interesting? That in our world today, while people in our communities, while people are richer than they have ever been, yet they feel poor. And I wonder if it's because, are we looking around at the culture around us to determine what normal is? And if we're doing that, we're going to move right with them. So, do we have the resources? Well, here's a map of Anabaptist churches in North America. I don't think it includes the Amish there, because we don't know where to put the pin. We could put it in the different communities. But if you conclude the Amish there yet, we have a tremendous amount of churches in North America. Our people are scattered all over. So if we're scattered all over the U.S., you know, right where we live, we work, we go to church, provide for our families, what are we doing with that 62%? Is it blessing others, or are we serving self? Think about a few of the things that we have that sometimes we take them for granted. There's a focus on godly families, and that's good. There's biblical teaching as a way of life. We hear about this in our churches. There's Christian schools. It's amazing that we can send our children to our own schools, our homes. And just a side note here, are we living Luke 14? I encourage you to go home and see what Luke 14 tells you. I'll give you a little secret here. It talks about how to make a guest list. And it tells you to invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind. It says, they cannot recompense thee, for thou shalt be recompensed at the resurrection of the just. When's the last time that we've invited a blind person, a lame person? Like the man was talking about the couple that he met. When's the last time we've invited those type of people into our home? Our businesses, great resource. In our businesses, are we more concerned about ourselves, or are we concerned about others? Recently, I heard a man speak, and he said he told his wife that he doesn't know if they're running a halfway house, a counseling center, or a nursing home because of all the different people they allow to work at their business. And I was really encouraged listening to him, because they're using employees. They have employees that are spent time in prison. They have people from town that work for them. And he feels like he's doing a lot of counseling with these people. They also have older gentlemen working at their business. Can't really do much except maybe sweep the floor a little bit and talk with customers when they come in. But yet he has them on payroll, because his vision is to help others. It's not about himself. And we have the informal apprenticeship training. We've been taught. Lots of people in our communities have not been taught. They don't know how to do the work because they never had the opportunity to see dad or uncle or grandpa or cousin or whoever it is. So what are we aiming for? We're all aiming for the good life, right? That's what we want. But maybe we need to redefine what the good life is. Maybe an exercise for you to do at home in your congregation would be to split your congregation up in little groups sometime and ask them, what's the good life in our congregation? And then have a discussion about that and see if your congregation is on target where Jesus would want you, or have we blown off course? So we're going to get into the Salt and Light course here a little bit. It's a tool to help our families and churches become trustworthy stewards. We want to think critically and wrestle and make choices as a local brotherhood. So just a little bit about the the Salt and Light curriculum. So Christian Aid Ministries has the SALT program. Gary Miller is the administrator of that. And that's who came up with these Salt and Light books. They've done this in the foreign field for many years now, helping people, poor people, save money and think about life. And they've developed the same thing for here in the U.S. so that we can use it as well. But I think it is a very worthy course. There are people struggling across the pond. There are people struggling in Shipshawana or Goshen, wherever we are here. So we're going to talk about stewardship from within. The books that you have, let me just go forward to that one there. The books that you have right there are the foundational principles only books. So it has tracks C and D. Tracks C is for the local church, and track D is for your youth, is what it's for. But this book here, with all of the lessons in it, gets to be pretty thick. So we actually broke it out into smaller ones and just did the foundational chapters in here. And that's what we're going to go through today. We don't have enough of the big ones for everybody, so that's why we are using these smaller ones today, but we do have some back there. We will talk about that a bit later. So you will see on the one, it says participant guide up top, and the other one says facilitator guide up top. And we're going to be using the participant guide first, so make sure you have the one that says participant guide. Also, as we go along here on the screen, it'll say track C, page 3. That's where I'm in my book. So if you go there, you can see track C about the local church. It talks about disparity and a number of other topics there as well. We'll go through some of that. Track D on pages 3 and 4 there, it's for our youth, and it's about opportunity. Our youth today have tremendous amounts of opportunity. They've been taught how to work. They have money. They can travel. They can do a lot of things. But the question is, where is their energy going to go? Is it going to flow to self, or is it going to flow through them to others? So the additional topics, they actually have a book that you can get with just the additional topics But I'll explain more of that later. The additional topics themselves, if you go to page 149 in your book that you have, you'll see the list of additional topics. So the idea is that you go through the foundational topics first, and then you pick from the additional topics what you would like to study. So page 149 there, you have chapters, just a variety of topics there, and they can be studied in any order. If you go to the what they call the B chapters, on page 151 there, it's about family. And you can see there it says study in any order. Or if you go to the C chapters, the golden years, it says designed to be studied in order. So you'd want to go C1, C2, C3 when you're studying that piece of it. The D chapters there, thinking about work, again, those are designed to be studied in order. So page 151 and 152, the D chapters and the E chapters there. So in the E chapters, thinking about business, again, it's designed to be studied in order. And really, the B chapter is about trying to reevaluate the purpose of our businesses. And if you want to order more books, the information is in your handout today. But if you want the complete book, we do have some of them back there. I'd be happy to hand them out to you afterwards. I'll make myself available back there. It would have all those 30 extra chapters in there, so you'd have it all in one book. So how's the course work? So it's a facilitator. It's not a teacher. It's not somebody getting up there and just teaching, but you want participation. So it's participants, not students. It's participatory, not lecturing. And it's dialogue, it's talking, not monologue. And it's open-ended questions that require thinking. And it generally avoids the do's and don'ts, but it offers biblical principles. You decide where God calls you, along with your local church. So it's different in philosophy than someone like a Dave Ramsey. If you do a Dave Ramsey course, Dave will tell you, do X and X and X and X, and then you get whatever it is. And he has very specific, this is what you do. I'm not saying that can't be helpful, but just because somebody's doing X, Y, Z, does that actually make them a good steward? Or do they maybe end up where they don't want to be because they followed X, Y, Z. So we generally avoid do's and don'ts, but we want you to seek God and your brotherhood to decide where God is calling you. So we're going to work through chapter 1 here in track C. So on page 5, it just tells you about the how it works. Again, that it's participatory learning, biblical principles rather than fiscal trends. Stories to illustrate the principles in everyday life, and more. So we're going to go on to page 11 in this book. The first chapter is talking about disparity, why poverty and wealth in our world. Why is there this disparity in our world? And we're going to practice here a little bit how this course works. So you'll see on page 12 there, there's an introductory activity. We discuss disparity from the Bible, the big picture, life with Bill and Sarah. So we want to think about how there actually is disparity in this world. And Richie did a very good job this morning talking about that as well. So I need 10 people to come up. This is participatory, so just 10 people line up here. Come on up here. I'll come down there. So just 10 people, quickly. I only got so many minutes, so if you can bring 10 people up here, that would be great. I'm going to want 3 people right here, and I'm going to want 7 people over here. Okay, we got three people. We got four people. There's plenty more there. You're actually going to get something. Yeah. Okay, so we got one, two, and we got one, two, three, four, five, six. So we need one more over there and one more over here. Surely. Okay, and actually I think we have enough now. Thank you, Stephen. So this is how the world, this is to show the disparity in the world. So we're going to divide the money in the world among you 10 people. So the people here with seven of y'all here, right? Okay, we're going to give you the money that you have in your part of the world. But I'm sorry, you don't actually get any. You'll get one. I think, yeah, I'll give you one. I'll give you one. Yep. I'm sorry. That's all the money that you all have. Now, these three over here, better hold out your hands here. Yep. That's a little, yeah, that's how it usually works. Yeah. So, if you have at least 10,000 in assets, you're in the group of three people holding 97% of the world's wealth. How does that make you feel?
A little guilty.
Humbled. A little guilty?
Humbled.
Humbled. What are you going to do about it? How does it make you feel? You've got the rest of the money in the world. How does that feel to you? Huh?
Sharing.
You're sharing. So you're gonna. He's gonna share with you. He's gonna eat one part and. Yeah, thank you. You can go back to your seats. But that's how. It's distributed. You're welcome to go back. But somebody, you got better pick up your money there. I think that was yours. So what does God have in mind? Why is there so much money at one spot? Am I thinking, well, it's because I've done things right. I run my business right, so I can make all this money. Is that what God has in mind? There are other illustrations like that as well. There's one on debt where, and the youth one. I actually know it's in loans in the 30 additional. And the activity is to get two buckets, fill them with rocks and really heavy, and then you have a guy with just one bucket and another guy with very little or about half of that, and another guy with basically no debt. And you get them to run a race, get the youth to run a race, these four people, have them run and see who can win the race. Well, who would win the race? The guy with the 2 5-gallon buckets? Well, there's no way. That's how debt can be. It's those type of interaction that you can have with this. So then we go to page 13 there from the Bible. We see here about rich man and Lazarus. And I'm just going to read here at the bottom. It says, Jesus shared this sobering account with his Jewish audience, revealing God's heartbeat for his people and their resources. There is much this story does not say, but a few key details in this account indicate expectations of those who have resources. We ignore them at our peril. And then there's the from the Bible story. There are three open-ended questions called Discovering the Principle. So I'm going to run out of time. Don't have time to read all of these, but what responsibility, number two there, what responsibility did the rich man have to Lazarus? And you as a group think about that and try to sort through. It's an open-ended question. There's not a, this is the right answer. Or number three there, does Lazarus live among us today? Describe the disparity that you have observed around you. And I noted we have Where is Lazarus books back there by Gary Miller. I encourage you to read that book as you think about the Lazaruses around you. And then there's the big story. The big picture story is typically a true story or fact-based to further illustrate the subject being studied. And I'd love to have us read this, but for sake of time, we're not going to. But it's talking about Trey and Haley, two people that got into drugs and they got married. And Haley actually, she's passed away now because she overdosed some time ago. But it says, top of page 15, perhaps you've encountered Trey and Haley in the grocery aisle at Walmart and nodded a greeting to them as you passed. Maybe they filled their car with gas at the pump across from you. You knew their background was different from yours, but you never realized how different. What did they do to deserve all the pain? Why is your story so different from theirs? And then there's understanding the principle questions there on page 15. Number two there. How is your story similar to Trey and Haley's? How is it different from theirs? And number three, how does God feel about disparity? What's God's heart for Trey and Haley? What kind of response does he desire? And then we have Life with Bill and Sarah, a story to create real-world dilemmas that many of us face. And then there's an applying the principles section there as well on page 16. What blessings did Sarah and Ava observe that they had received? Number two there. How would Trey and Haley feel? And this story was about a 40th wedding anniversary event that a plain couple had. They had friends, all kinds of friends coming to their 40th wedding anniversary party. So how would Trey and Haley feel at an event like this? What responsibility does Sarah's family have to people like Trey and Haley? Would we bring the Trey and Haley to our family gathering? Or would that make things too messy? Then there's an activity on page 17 there, thinking about what we have, the disparity we have. Like, I think probably all of us would answer yes there. Do you have this? Access to clean drinking water. Access to toilets. Earn more than $10 a day. Own a personal vehicle. We have been given so much. But why? Why has God given us so much? And then there's a summary there on page 18. And I'm going to keep on going to the tracking income and expenses. So on page 19 and 20, it talks about tracking income and expenses. And this piece really is essential. You know, most of us think that if our income was just higher, our financial struggles would go away. When in fact, the problem is our spending. And many do not know where their money is going. I could tell you stories of people I've worked with in our own communities. They don't know where they're going. They're in trouble because they have no idea. Because they don't track. They don't know how much coffee they're drinking. Coffee drinks that they're drinking. I harp on coffee shops. They don't have any idea what they're spending. And often the tracking income and expenses piece here, there's pressure actually just to skip that, to skip this exercise. But from Salt's experience, unless people do this, the results are less than ideal. So, any thoughts so far? Do you think you could go home to your church and do this in your community? I'm going to be back there later. You're welcome to come back and ask me questions about the course. There's a facilitator's guide there. Just going to spend just a couple minutes in there in the facilitator's guide. It's the other book, page 11. So it just tells you there what the focus is for that chapter. And if you go to page 12 there, you'll see that the page looks similar, except the participant guide page is smaller there. And around the margin, there's brief instructions or guidance for whoever is facilitating the course. Gives them some guidance on how to lead out. So, how can we remove some blockers for you to go home and get started? You know, many times what SALT has found when they do seminars, they've done multi-day seminars teaching people how to work through this curriculum. People go away excited, but a couple years later they'll talk to the people and they say, yeah, we just never got it started. So how do we remove those blockers? We're handing a lot of books out today. We actually want them to get used. Some might become dust collectors. That's okay, but we want you to use them. So start with the foundational chapters, and then select subjects from the additional topics to study together. And the goal is to learn in bite-sized chunks, allowing the church and home conversations with Holy Spirit guidance. And I would say, like, this fall you could do a couple chapters. Maybe next spring you could do a couple more chapters. Next year you could do some more chapters. If you look at the whole book and say, I got to get through this whole thing, 36 chapters, that looks overwhelming. No, do it bite-sized. Where are you going to do it? There's different church groups here. You might have midweek services. There's the Bible schools. There's small groups. There's youth groups. Maybe there's just a couple interested families in your church that you know of that would enjoy going through something like this, and maybe pull some of them in, and some that you feel need to go through it. What about employee lunchrooms or conference rooms? What if our businesses would go through this type of material with their employees? Actually take an hour or 2 hours every month to teach them something like this. What difference would it make in their lives? You know, changing worldviews takes time. There's got to be ongoing teaching, thinking, and wrestling. Multiple years. The realignment of the good life. Perhaps a list of do's and don'ts are of limited value in changing ultimate allegiance. This is what you call, sometimes it's called the cultural onion. We have to remember we are trying to change normal in terms of our wealth flowing to the Lazarus around us. And that's going to take time. If it changes quickly, it's probably not sustainable. But changing the worldview for limiting our spending on ourselves and in our churches will take time. And we have to keep beating the same drums. And we can't get discouraged. This is just one of the tools that you can use. Now, the local brotherhood has the gifts. You don't need an outside expert to come and help you get this off the ground. The truth is there's not enough of facilitators from SALT that can come and do it in your community. And even if they did, they don't have the answers for your community. They don't have all the answers. They're learning as well. But you have a brotherhood led with the Bible and the Holy Spirit. You all are very capable. Can we pour into serving those around us? You know, I think investing in the hurting and struggling around us is a powerful antidote in having our resources flow to the kingdom. And as Chris was talking earlier about some of the needs we have, I thought, I wonder if this would also be part of our solution to the problem we have, if we would get our eyes off ourselves and think about others outside of ourselves and even outside of our communities that need help. So they also have a track A and track B. We do not have those with us. But track A is about chronic needs. If you have neighbors that are in the chronic need category, like at the Faith Mission of Elkhart thing, those people have chronic need. Are you willing to get down and get dirty with some of those people? And then track B is more your local community, where the people are on the same economic scale as you are, but they also need help. They're struggling with broken relationships, or maybe they're struggling with consumer debt. You might be surprised how many of your neighbors are struggling with consumer debt. Everything looks good, but is it good? And both of these courses start with hope. Because if there is no hope, why would you change your behavior or your choices? I'm going to conclude with this story about Cyprian of Carthage. So he was a Roman citizen at the time when Rome ruled the world. Now this picture is actually a picture of what Carthage looks like today in modern day North Africa. So this was the happening place back in his time. And as I was studying for this, I thought, would where we live ever look like this? In 1800 years from now, if the world stands, will where we live look like this? But at the time that he lived, it was the happening place. He was born in the upper echelons of society in 210 AD. He was wealthy and educated, and he had access to all the world had to offer. But he did have a problem. His life was empty, and he had an inner longing for truth. And it wasn't until he was middle-aged that he found what he was looking for. He found peace in Jesus Christ. He was baptized at 40 years old, and he was tutored by Tertullian, and he became a passionate follower of Jesus. And here's perhaps the most amazing truth. Reading Jesus' words regarding the dangers of riches, he liquidated his entire estate and joyfully gave to the poor. Do you and I take Jesus' teaching about wealth and possessions that seriously? So what happened to him? Well, in an unusual move, seeing Cyprian's devotion to the Lord, the church made him a leader within just a few years. They saw his devotion to the Lord. How did they see that? I think they saw it because he sold everything he had and gave to the poor. In 250, just after he had been made bishop of Carthage, several waves of persecution hit the city, and he was forced into hiding. He was eventually captured and beheaded in 258 AD. From the world's perspective, Cyprian's passionate pursuit of truth had been costly. What about you and me? As we think about ways to solve our wealth dilemmas, may the Lord guide and direct you in your congregation as you seek to become stewards that honor God.